WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Fire crews getting a break from the winds in Southern California today, but residents are still under evacuation orders and some returning to their scorched neighborhoods for the first time. ABC's Jacqueline Lee is in Ventura County.
More than 14,000 residents remain under evacuation orders and at least six people injured. Many homeowners discovering the majority of their Camarillo Heights neighborhood incinerated.
That's like my childhood home. It's where we got married.
Firefighters warning the threat is not over. The Hurricane Force Santa Ana winds seen as further fuel for these wildfires.
The Rockies and parts of the Southwest getting hit with snow and heavy rain in the forecast for parts of the South this weekend. A transition meeting between President Biden and President-elect Trump now set to take place Wednesday in the Oval Office in New York City today. A march on the Upper West Side, demonstrators and advocates for women's rights. This is ABC News. The FBI says Iran's Revolutionary Guard is behind a plot in an attempted assassination against President-elect Trump. The Justice Department charging three men, including an operative named Farhad Shakari. ABC's Aaron Katursky has more.
The FBI says Iran's elite Revolutionary Guard Corps instructed an Afghan operative with a criminal background to focus on surveilling and ultimately assassinating former President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. On October 7th, court records say the operative, Farhad Shakiri, was told to provide a plan within 7 days to kill Trump, and if he couldn't, to wait until after the election, because the Iranians assessed that Trump would lose the election, and afterward it would be easier to assassinate him.
Officials in southwestern Pakistan say a suicide bomber detonated explosives at a train station, killing more than two dozen people today, including staffers and soldiers. This is ABC News.
Come to the Lazy Elf Lounge to cheer on the green and gold. Enjoy free Jello shots with every Green Bay touchdown. Stock up on $20 buckets of White Claw and High Noon, $15 assorted buckets of Busch Light, Miller, and Bud products, plus $4 off wing baskets when you dine in. Come for all the fun on game days at the Lazy Elf Lounge, North Stoughton Road in Madison. Follow them on Facebook and find the full menu at LazyElfLounge.com.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
He's a comedian, a writer, and an actor, and teaches comedy. One of Wisconsin's own. Dobie Maxwell joins me here on Nightlight. Hey, Dobe.
Pete Schwabba, I am Chico. You're the man. Can you hear me? Is my Amish wood-burning computer plugged into the...
You got Amish. Oh, you got to update, buddy. I got gas powered and it's working like a charm. So it'll change your life.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. Donald Trump's victory was in large part due to voters in rural areas like here in Wisconsin. Mike Moen reports.
While other contributing factors are discussed, a rural expert says it's clear longstanding political sentiments in smaller towns haven't changed. As the results from Tuesday night are examined, political analysts cite Trump's gain with Latino voters. Colby College's Nick Jacobs, who has written about rural issues, says the campaign also regained some ground in rural America that it had lost in 2020. Jacobs says if the media or political strategists try to again understand why these areas still largely back Trump, they have to resist preconceived notions.
We're going to see it again with these diner interviews, is that prior to even being interviewed, rural people were put into this prefabricated box. And the truth is that voters in rural places and urban places, they're complicated.
But Jacobs says Democrats should keep trying to produce local candidates who can relate to these voters, adding that having both parties find success in rural America is good for democracy. Jacobs says his research, along with separate polling, has shown that rural and urban voters often agree on certain issues.
Concerns about corporate monopolies, freedom within sort of the marketplace, whether that's for healthcare or reproductive rights. There are very few major policy issues that divide the two.
The Biden administration's big policy achievements, the bipartisan infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act, have paved the way for a lot of rural investment. But Jacobs says many projects aren't shovel-ready yet, and aren't likely to move the needle with rural voters hesitant to embrace them. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
News, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy with showers and drizzle tonight, lows upper 40s. Early rain for Sunday, then mostly cloudy, highs low 50s. Sunshine's back for Monday, highs into the low 50s, and on Tuesday, staying in the low 50s with more sunshine. It's 55 right now.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we continue looking for California guy Eric Hovde, and we'll hear from Mr. Global Matt Randolph, oil and gas expert. He's fantastic. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 11. A voice for Madison, real news and great conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
With all of the uncertainty and anxiety we're feeling after the election this week, we'll hear first from The Todd Alba Show, covering tips on mindfulness and relieving stress as we look towards the future.
Light a candle. Pull up for some meditation with Todd. You're good enough, you're smart enough, and doggone it, people like you. Welcome back to the show. Thank you. That's Aaron Sommer's way of saying I'm not going to let you get off the rails. We're gonna do this bit. Well done. All right, this is really good, I think. We've touched on this. We've never gotten through the entire thing, but I think it's really important. And maybe you're right, Sommer. Maybe I need a little of this myself today. So clinical psychologist, and I hope I don't butcher the name too bad, clinical psychologist Shannon Sauer Zavala offers us a few science-backed strategies to rein in our stress about the election. It's baked into being a human that uncertainty causes anxiety, and with this election, there's lots of ingredients for that on the list, certainly. So Sauer Zavala recommends the following. Number one, being mindful. We hear that term a lot. What does that really mean? Well, if you haven't tried mindfulness techniques before, the idea is to take a minute to be aware of yourself. Your mind and your body, focus on the present, not the past, not the future. Be here now. I had a friend of mine for a long time who was into this a lot. And at first I was like, really? And then I'm like, yeah. And I still have friends who are into it. Just take a moment and close your eyes and just breathe. Focus like on the breath coming into your body and out. And if you think it's not quote unquote manly, there are a lot of NFL professional sports players who will tell you that they do this now all the time and it helps them focus and be better athletes. So try this. Just be mindful.
Can I add one thing to that?
Please.
One specific part of mindfulness that I've tried. So my trombone professor in college taught us about this. It wasn't some weird mystical routine or ritual. It was just, nope, we're in trombone studio. We're all going to sit down and focus on our bodies for a minute. Try tensing up your body and then releasing the tension. And remember what that feels like. Mm-hmm. And then you can start to, if you do this often enough, you can start to notice when you're tensing up unconsciously and release it. And that is tremendously helpful.
That's excellent. That's an excellent tip, Sommers. Well done. Number two, be a gentle critic of yourself. Be non-judgmental. Don't beat yourself up thinking that you're overreacting or being weak. Making judgments about your emotions makes you just feel worse and piles on anxiety. Instead, let go of the ifs. What ifs? Remember that the letters in the word fear, F-E-A-R, stand for false events appearing
real. Let me say that again. FEAR, F-E-A-R, stands for false events appearing real. Yes, there are real concerns, obviously. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. Come back to the present. Number three, don't dwell on worst-case scenarios. I think this is really important today. When things don't go our way, we deal with it one step at a time. We'll all cope with it one day, one week, maybe one hour at a time. Control what you can control. We as individuals can't suddenly undo this election. Not possible. People have voted. It's been certified. Won the popular vote, won the electoral vote. But take it one day at a time. What can you do to control things at your work, with your family, getting outside? Let's not dwell on the absolute worst case scenario. Are there concerns about that? Absolutely. Are those well-founded concerns? Absolutely. But if we think of all of this all at once, we're just going to get overwhelmed. We're going to be way emotional and not be able to focus on the things we have to do in our daily lives to keep going and moving forward. Number four, put down your phone and turn off the TV, even the radio, if that is what it takes for your self-care needs. Forget about the fear parts of this. Forget about the FOMO, the FOMO. You know what that is, Somers?
Fear of missing out.
Well done. Look at that. The young person knows. It's a real thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I got to look at my phone. I'm going to miss something.
Yeah, the same thing with like collectible items. Like there's only so many. Get it before it sells out.
It's a great advertising technique.
Because it works.
It works. You'll catch up soon enough. In the last 48 hours, I have made calls and texted friends and family that I care about and love. Not all of them yet. But just like retouching base with some of these people. Again, our relationships, the people that we love, are real and foundational. And the results of yesterday or Tuesday's election does not change that. The people that love us still love us. The people that we love, we still love them. We need to be grounded in these times. Emotional rage and fear and anger and just shooting off the hip, that does not serve any of us, including myself, well. I talked about this with Zomers before we went on the phone today. There have been, well, by the way, we're approaching our 2-year anniversary, Zomers.
Yeah, less than a week, or a week exactly.
A week today. We'll be on the air. Our show will be a 2 years old a week from today. I have done a couple of shows when I've been too emotional. I probably should not have gone on the air. I realized that. And that's why after this election, I have tried to really focus on some of these tips I've given you today. Doesn't mean I don't care. Doesn't mean I'm not fearful. Doesn't mean I don't have all these emotions and feel all these things. But coming behind this microphone every day is a privilege. And it doesn't do you or anybody else any good if I bring my emotional baggage in here and just start going off. I'm about trying to find solutions. I'm chuckling because my former boss, Dale Schultz, somebody would call up or I don't know, a Billy wanted past wasn't doing well. And we'd say, Dale, you know, what, this is what's going on. What do you want us to do? And he'd look at us and say, don't bring me problems. Bring me solutions. I've never forgotten that. And you know what? He's right. We have to find solutions. And part of finding solutions is a little self-examination. It's not going to hurt any of us, including myself. How I conduct this show. How folks in politics message. This was not some sort of a freak accident win, whether we like to admit that or not. Trump won and won big. Republicans won and won big. The question is, why is that? And where I was going to go, coming back out of break, is there's a lot of well-intentioned and wonderful people texting in today. But I believe there's a lot of the anger is pointed outside the tent. I worked in politics for 30 years. I've lost races as a campaign manager. I lost my own two on the ballot. I know what it's like to lose. And part of that in losing is self-examining after. And one of the questions that Democrats and the Democratic Party has to address is, why did we lose 15 to 20 million voters compared to 4 years ago? Was that over the Palestinian Gaza issue? Was that over people at our own party, black men, who didn't want to vote for a woman? Why is that? Are they business people who said we feel like we're beat up on? We have to be big enough as a society when things don't go our way to not always blame the other person. 855-752-4842. Let's go to Sussex. Gary, who's been waiting patiently. Gary, I appreciate holding. What say you?
Hello?
Gary, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Todd?
Yes, sir. That's what they call me.
Todd, it's Gary.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hey, you know, I'm 72 years old. I've gone through a lot of elections, win and lose. I make it through. Young people today have to realize that you're going to make it through the next day. You're going to make it through the next year. You know, you break up your teenage kids. They break up their boyfriend, their girlfriend. They think it's the end of the world, you know. And you find out, you end up marrying a few years later. You find this beautiful wife like I have. Been married for 51 years. And I thank God for unanswered prayers, you know, that I was praying, oh, God, don't let me break up this girl. Don't let her, you know. And then all of a sudden he introduces my wife to me, and 51 years later, we're still happily married. So the fact is, you know, I'm glad we won. I'm glad that, you know, Kamala Harris did not get in there, but I'm not stomping on your grave. I won't do that because that's not me, okay? But I blame the media on a lot of this stuff, not telling you guys the truth, which us Republicans knew what was going on with Joe Biden for 2 years. We saw him tripping and making all these gaffes and everything like that and that stuff. And then instead of you guys picking the wrong candidate, they picked the candidate for you. You had no choice. All the Democrats had no choice on which candidate. These elites, Obama, Pelosi, these big donors, they picked your candidate for you. You know, I think that you could have had a better. I think Gavin Newsom would have been a good candidate, and I think he would have won. I really do.
That's a really interesting point. Because my thought, I think Gavin Newsom is enormously talented as an orator and done some good things in California, but they also have a huge homeless problem. I think there are other economic issues that California is in that would have come out in a general election campaign. That's just my take on it. I think, first of all, let me just state this. I do believe that the Vice President Harris was a great candidate and ran a great campaign in 100 days. I think had she had the full time, I think if Joe Biden had not run for reelection and she had a full and actually had a proper primary, which she had to come through, I think she would have could have very well won. History will talk about for years whether Joe Biden should have run for a second term and have it happen the way it is. I mean, that's a legit, you know, thing to bring up. All right, thanks, Gary. We're up against the clock. More of your calls after this as Zomers lights another sage candle. We'll burn some sage. We'll light some sage. We are not having a ayahuasca ceremony.
No, I do share a birthday with Aaron Rodgers, but I'm not sharing that with him.
Back after this, we'll wrap it up. Don't go anywhere on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from noon till 2. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
A new choice. Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Tom, your thoughts.
I don't believe that people don't know who Trump is at this point, and they have willfully decided to ignore everything he has said in order to vote what they think is the most important thing. And that's what voting is all about. But you can't claim ignorance when it comes time that Trump is going to pull the trigger and do some things that are going to hurt you and your family. That's what's probably going to happen.
Yeah.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
The John and Gordy Show.
Optimism alone is not enough to ward off despair.
But hope can, regardless of how things may turn out. Hope is what can still get you to the better place eventually. Mm-hmm. So you don't have hope because you expect things to turn out well. You have hope because what that hope is rooted in is worth it regardless.
Weekday mornings, 6 till 8 on 92.7 WMDX.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear from the Earl Ingram Show. Earl and co-host Sandy Williams are joined by Marquette pollster Charles Franklin to reflect on the election results and understand why the polling got it wrong.
Back to a very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. I am joined, Sandy Williams has agreed to join us this entire week, my co-host. And so we are joined by Professor Charles Franklin as we kind of, you know, go over what transpired on yesterday. Sandy, I think there was something you were saying before we had to go to break.
Well, I was just saying that, you know, Donald Trump has this loyal group, and I don't know how many millions it is, but it's tens of millions who follow him, who follow his brand. And I think there is some process, and maybe the professor has done it with polling, to try and figure out what elements of the brand, the Trump brand, it is that allow people to be so enthusiastically supportive of someone who they find to be faulted. You know, they have to make apologies for him, but they don't abandon him. And my sense is that a part of this is the anti-elite kind of a movement, the anti-elite, which includes this woke, the whole woke issue, and that it's been a major distraction for the Democrats, taking away from real policy to talk about sort of fictitious policy issues.
Yeah. No, I would mostly support that. I think that in terms of the messaging that Democrats have done and the policy focus that they've done, I think it has a strong influence of upper middle class, highly educated values. And that's an important part of the country. But we should remember that only about 35 to 38% of the country has a college degree. A little over 60% lack a college degree. And in the old days, you know, if you ask people what they liked about the Democratic Party, they said they're for the working man. Man, notice the dated terminology there. But that was such an overwhelming image of the party from the 30s through the 70s, 80s and so on. But it has shifted pretty dramatically in the modern era. And Trump has had a big role in doing that by attacking elites, attacking economically advantaged people, something amusing coming from a billionaire, but it's still been a powerful message for the now going on 8-9 years that Trump has been intimately involved in American politics.
You know, I'm one of those blue collar workers. I'm one of those people without a college degree. And so when I hear people talking about the elites and that the elites are basically are more on the Democratic side of things, I see many elites in the Republican Party as well. And yes. and so when I hear that the Democrats are the ones who are, you know, the elites are, they've done a great job of sending that message out to people who live in rural areas. And I would say to those people today, if I could talk to them, what do you think Donald Trump is going to do to change your reality? He was there for 4 years. And he didn't deliver on the things that he promised you. Yes, when you ask the question whether or not people were in a better shape financially then than they were today, that would be yes, because they weren't living through the inflationary years that started with Donald Trump and wound up ending with Joe Biden, and also the fact that the Democrats weren't able to really educate that populace that it was a global inflation and that our nation did better handling it than the rest of the world.
I have a sense that this elite thing has a lot to do with educational institutions and the image of ivory towers, and I have a sense that the unrest on campuses that occurred this last year was a red flag reminder to the populist kind of gut reaction that it was reacting against that and paints the Democrats as being the people who inhabit those places. I don't know. This is my intuition, Doctor. You do polling. Do you think that's correct?
Well, you know, James Carville, the Democratic campaign consultant, major figure in the Clinton administration, says the problem with the Democratic Party is it sounds like a conversation in a faculty lounge. And I think that's an exaggeration, but there's certainly a real core of truth to that many of the concerns that Democrats have, especially Democratic activists, are on the cutting edge of social issues in a way that most of the country hasn't come to. If we look a little bit at history, think about the change in opinion about gay rights and same-sex marriage. It moved pretty fast in favor of same-sex marriage, but it still took 20 years for that to go from being supported by only 20% of the public to 60% of the public. So when you're on the cutting edge of social issues, it takes a while to bring the public along, if you can even succeed in that. The record is that it can succeed, but you shouldn't overestimate how long and slow a process it is.
So, Professor, the healing aspects of this, there has to be a healing. How do you begin to, and where do you begin in that process?
Well, I'm not very sanguine about that happening very fast. I think it's a
generation
difficult process. I think the Trump administration coming up the next 4 years will be the time for the Republicans to decide what the future of their party looks like in 2028 and beyond. And I think at least as importantly, a time for Democrats to decide how can they oppose Donald Trump over these next 4 years and establish a new image of the party that can be more successful when we come to the 28 presidential campaign, and for that matter, the 26 midterms.
Professor Franklin, get some rest. It is a pleasure and an honor to have you on. We'll be certainly reaching out to you in the future.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Very special election edition of the Earl Ingram Show with my co-host Sandy Williams. Our phone lines are open at 855-752-4842. We'd love to hear your thoughts on yesterday's outcome. You're tuned into a very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show.
So tell me, please, can we fix our nation's broken heart? Our nation's broken heart. Are we brave enough to try? Hey, we must fix our nation's broken heart to leave a better world behind. We've come together.
The Earl Ingram Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 8 till 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
This is Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Fire crews getting a break from the winds in Southern California today, but residents are still under evacuation orders and some returning to their scorched neighborhoods for the first time. ABC's Jacqueline Lee is in Ventura County.
More than 14,000 residents remain under evacuation orders and at least six people injured. Many homeowners discovering the majority of their Camarillo Heights neighborhood incinerated.
That's like my childhood home. It's where we got married.
Firefighters warning the threat is not over. The Hurricane Force Santa Ana winds seen as further fuel for these wildfires.
The Rockies and parts of the Southwest getting hit with snow and heavy rain in the forecast for parts of the South this weekend. A transition meeting between President Biden and President-elect Trump now set to take place Wednesday in the Oval Office in New York City today. A march on the Upper West Side, demonstrators and advocates for women's rights. This is ABC News.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
The Bucks lose in New York. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks fell behind early and lost to the Knicks at Madison Square Garden, 116-94. Doc Rivers on what he was most disappointed in.
I would say just the offensive rebounds. You know, early on, I thought, you know, the first 8 minutes, we got stops on every possession, and then they got the ball back. I think they had 8 offensive rebounds in the first 9 minutes of the game. You know, they kept moving the ball. Then they shoot, they get a rebound. They get another rebound, and now we're walking the ball at the floor, playing slow basketball.
The Bucks will host the Celtics tomorrow afternoon, 2 o'clock. College hoops, number 18th ranked Marquette with an 82-63 win over the George Mason Patriots. Boys high school volleyball, Sussex Hamilton won the state title last night in 5 sets over Middleton. Tonight, the Hamilton girls team faces Divine Savior Holy Angels for the championship, 7:30 at the Rest Center in Green Bay. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy with showers and drizzle tonight, lows upper 40s. Early rain for Sunday, then mostly cloudy, highs low 50s. Sunshine's back for Monday, highs into the low 50s, and on Tuesday, staying in the low 50s with more sunshine. It's 55 right now.
Tons of glass artists share the same passion for eye-catching art as Ignite Glass and Gifts, so we're showcasing their work alongside our talented local artists and our in-house Ignite artists. The latest techniques, the hottest colors, and mind-blowing designs are here for you to enjoy. Madison's favorite for glass, gifts, and vape, Ignite Glass and Gifts. Monona Drive, Williamson Street, and Odana Road, plus IgniteGlassandGifts.com. Do your eyes a favor and see this stuff.
Oh no, stomach issues again?
Stomach issues? Who are you?
Your pancreas. I could be the real reason for your diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose oily stools.
I thought it was my stomach.
People often do, but any of these symptoms could mean having a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and speak with your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
As a network, we're called Civic Media because a big part of it is we want to start modeling how civic discourse really should happen and being respectful of each other's opinions, even if you disagree, you know, like they should be given a platform.
If Rocker and I can get along, right. We can all get along.
I know,
along.
Exactly.
Right,
yeah.
Rocker?
Yeah, that's right, Jimmy.
Well, you do have a wall in between the two of you, so
glass.
It's like...
It's
like
only glass,
it's only...
Tear down the walls. Listen to Max Inc. Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, we're all about Madison as I welcome comedian Johnny Beaner back to the show, and then WMDX morning show radio legends John Peterson and Gordy Young join the show.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to this week's Civic Media Spotlight. We go now to the John and Gordy Show. And as they do on every Thursday, they talked with Dr. Tim Slecker of Busted Pencils, this week about what the future Trump presidency will mean for the Department of Education and public school more broadly.
It's morning. Time to wake up, get some coffee, and call your parole officer. It's John and Gordy in the morning on 92.7 WMDX.
So we're on the run, right?
We are.
We're on the lam. That's right.
92.7 WMDX, John and Gordy in the morning. It's 6:34. Weather today, clear skies this morning. Lots of sunshine, a high about 55. Currently, it's 39.
Here. And as we do each and every Thursday morning at 6:35, we go to Busted Pencils, one of the best educational programs on the radio. And these guys now have a regular slot on Saturdays at, I believe, 3 o'clock. Is that right, Tim?
3 o'clock on Saturdays. Yep, you can catch Johnny and me. We'll be doing all the things we used to do 5 days a week, full one-hour show, and just really excited to be doing that. Podcast is still dropping Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and then we'll be having the show on Saturday. And the show on Saturday, people are like, is that a, you know, kind of like an accumulation of what you guys did Monday, Wednesday, Friday? No, it's absolutely its own solid independent show that drops on Saturdays at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, you had a great program asking people to go out and vote. You covered every bit of ground on that program that I could think of, and it was just exceptional. I appreciate that, Tim.
Well, thank you, but it was obviously a massive failure.
Well, it was a good attempt anyway.
So now that Donald Trump's going to be taking things over, what are you hearing? What do you expect? Is the Department of Education going to be dismantled on day one? Is that one of the
maybe? I mean, that's the Project 2025, on the list. In fact, one of the high priorities of Project 2025, while education didn't necessarily get a big spotlight, quote, in the election, the Project 2025, that is one of the, you know, kind of glaring things that jumps out is the plan to dismantle the Department of Education. Just to remind people, too, this is not a new idea coming out of some kind of maniac Trump world. Ronald Reagan wanted to do this in 1980.
No, really? I did not know that.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because remember, it had just been put together by Jimmy Carter in the 70s, and it was really seen as this kind of federal overreach of public education. And yeah, from the time of Reagan, the dismantling of the Department of Education has been a conservative goal. Going on 40 years.
Right. And we're kind of waiting around to see what the House is going to look like, whether it's going to be in Republican hands or Democratic hands. We still don't know yet. But if they own all three branches of government, it's going to be very, very difficult for anybody to stop these people.
Yeah, it's going to be really difficult. And I think this is the thing we had been really talking about a lot on Busted Pencils, is a genuine concern for the future of public education in America. What does this mean? What does a Trump victory mean? What will it really mean? You know, when you say not only, you know, both branches of government, a Supreme Court and the president, what's in store? Understand that public education at its best was this idea of bringing all of our communities together to create a movement of citizens that actually take serious their role as a participant in the American democracy. And the attack now of saying, you know what, public schools, hey, we're going to put them away. We got a lot of work to do. And so I hate to say it this way, but on Busted Pencils, we're ready. We're excited because we know that what we have been talking about here is at the core, and that hopefully we can rally the people that we were starting to get together to say public education in this country is absolutely something that we must uphold and defend. Whether the Department of Education is dismantled, possibly, I see more likely that there's a Department of Education that's gutted and that we, quote, create an institutional appearance, but that it will just be used to put in place an education vision very similar to what they were talking about. And I'm going to say this right now, don't be surprised if you don't see a push for what's called national school vouchers.
Yes.
Like we have in like we have in Wisconsin, the voucher system where, you know what, private school, if you want to send your kids to a private school, no longer is it your responsibility to come up with all the money. The state will just give you a check for $7,000-$9,000, and then you send your kid to the school of their choice. And that happens at the state level, and everybody knows the disaster that it has been from the school vouchers in Wisconsin, that well over 75% of the people taking that voucher now already had their kids in private schools. So in other words, we're funding wealthy people's ability to send their kids to private schools. And then the other part of this, we've talked about this, remember, these are schools that have no accountability to the taxpayers, whose money it will be used to actually pay for a federal voucher too. Yeah. You know, so in other words, hanging out, you know, remember when the dinosaurs and cavemen all kind of hung out together?
Yes, about I remember 6,000
years ago.
Okay.
You know,
well, yeah, there's, you know, the thing is, there's not a lot of support for a statewide version of choice, school choice. There isn't. No one wants to see that happen. They do want the public schools to be there.
Yeah, and in fact, there is, you know, some good news in the election. The states that actually put vouchers on the ballot all pushed back against and said, no, we don't want statewide vouchers, which is interesting, right? Because when you put vouchers to the voters all the time reject it and say, no. Public schools, we want our money going to our public schools, not to Slacker to fund his kid to go off to some kind of weird space camp where they can, you know, talk about doing microdoses of mushrooms and then hanging out with dinosaurs and people.
I don't know. That sounds pretty good, actually. Talking to Dr. Tim Slacker from Busted Pencils. Let's go to the phone line, 608-879-8255. That's 879-TALK.
Well, we do have Space Force.
You lose Mark?
We do have Space Force, so we need a space camp. So
we need space camp. Microdosing with dinosaurs and cave people. I don't know.
I know that. I remember Johnny talking about the fact that he does want choice. He likes choice in schools because he doesn't want to be stuck in a bad school if, in fact, you know, his students go to a bad school. But I think he was talking about having a choice to go to another public school, right? Is that correct?
Yeah. And, you know, Johnny points out the reality of saying this, which is to, you know, sometimes public school people get, you know, there's almost forgetting about the fact that, guess what, there are some public schools that sometimes aren't that great. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that if you don't have a great public school, we need to be able to do something about that.
Right.
So that was the kind of indication. There's Mark back.
Yeah, we have Mark back on the phones here. Go ahead, Mark, with your comment or question. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, as far as the cabinet, I mean, we won't need education anymore because I think they'll just eliminate all the child labor laws and
that's right.
Put children right to work.
Mark, that's called workforce development.
They want to get rid of that too. I mean, they're going to get rid of the minimum wage laws and the hourly restrictions on that, and that because it is all. There's so many parallels. You know, I've just been reading this book on Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany and it's an older book, and I mean, but some of the parallels in the language they're using and the tactics that they used in the election and what their goals are, because I see echoes of that in even for the treatment of women, because in Nazi Germany, women were expected to be the mere vessels that they've been talking about and precious vessels to produce children, and women are supposed to be, you know, well, a little bit educated, but we just want to have strong mothers who, you know, they're strong in the body at least to bear the children that they're going to need for, you know, to have, you know, good strong warriors for whatever accomplishments they want to have there. And I don't know if they're that militaristic at this point. I mean, that they're licking their chops to go through Mexico like the South apparently wanted to do after the Civil War, or have casting greedy eyes on the forests of Canada, that I don't know if I'd put, and maybe I'm being hyperbolic here, but I don't know if I'd put anything past the people behind Project
I think you brought up a good point about child labor, lowering the standards for child labor, because we have, you know, in high schools, they prepare people for apprenticeships, right? Is that correct? Mm-hmm. In job opportunities.
Sure.
So
sure.
What if they just lowered the standard a little bit more and, you know, allowed kids to actually leave school and take a lot of these apprenticeships at a very early age?
Hey, you know what? Like I said, job force work training is never too early to start. Preschool, maybe we can start putting together preschools, you know, themed around certain manufacturing jobs.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, your kid's got these really small little fingers. We're going to use them to do some kind of micro type of. Yeah. Oh, it's frightening. I know it's almost it. You start to potentially, I mean, humor is what helps us get through this.
Yeah.
But the reality of what can happen here, truly a dismantling of public education, what could happen if we did that? What's at stake? Let me put this out there to the potential of somebody who's saying, well, you know, well, why would we care, Tim? Well, okay, here's one thing. You know what? It's my go-to place. You love Friday night football? Great. That's at risk right now. Okay. That's at risk. The kind of team spirit, things that bring together communities that public schools do so well, that's at risk there because this idea, we don't want that. So the institution of public education is at risk. And we did many, many, many shows up to the election point in saying that, you know, the reality here is that public schools are on the ballot in this election, even though education policy didn't really have any place to be talked about during this election. The reality of Project 2025 and that wish list in there, particularly starting with the dismantling of the Department of Education, that was an indicator to say that the public school message, the mission of public schools was at stake. And so now what are we going to do? How are we going forward with this? What are we worried about?
I think what they're going to do is try to withhold funding for education, at least from a federal level, and then force these schools, the public schools, to get rid of ridiculous myths about critical race theory.
We don't want to be talking about the fact, you know, I mean, there was this thing called slavery in the past.
Yes.
Now it, you know, according to some people, it's I don't know what's debate.
A job opportunity.
It's a job training program.
That's right.
According to alternative facts.
Sure.
You know, and so we don't want to be too harsh because there may have been some slave owners who were really concerned about the welfare of their slaves and truly had. See, this is critical race theory. And John, pointing that out, I actually like to remind people that that really is shorthand for saying, no, history that we don't like. It's not critical race theory. It's history that doesn't conform to the story we're trying to tell. So something such as slavery. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to put in the back burners the critical understandings of understanding what slavery was about. In fact, we're going to move that away. They're trying to call that critical race theory. I'm trying to say you're suppressing the truth.
Yeah,
that's right. And a lot of times they call it political content.
Yeah,
it's woke if we teach them about something like that.
Talking with Dr. Tim Slecker from Busted Pencils, we got a text here, Tim. Here in Wisconsin, school budgets are already extremely tight. The state has become dependent on federal money so we can cut state taxes. With the
says. Department of Ed, we will see more budget cuts.
There we go.
We'll
see more budget cuts. And, you know, again, back to Wisconsin. In fact, we just recorded an episode with Jenny Hofschulte. She's one of the directors of the Wisconsin Public Education Network, who has been largely at helping out, you know, in Wisconsin, the use of referendum to pay for schools. And the reality too there is that there's billions of dollars in excess in right now in a rainy day fund that hasn't been allocated to the public schools.
That's right.
It is 6:49. We will continue with Busted Pencils, Dr. Tim Slecker, and talk more about education in Wisconsin right after this.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. A voice for Madison, real news and great conversation, 92.7 WMDX. The Maggie Dawn Show.
It is absolutely disgusting for conservatives to suggest that because someone is poor or struggling, that they lack judgment. If anybody needs morality policing, it's rich folks, for crying out loud, not people who are struggling to put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
A new choice. Madison's real news and great conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wrapping up hour one of this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we need a little distraction from politics, and to the rescue comes Pete Schwabe from Nightlight. This week, he talked with John Grease, best known for his role as Uncle Rico in Napoleon Dynamite. They talk about his career as an actor and his upcoming event at the Barrymore Theater in Madison, Napoleon Dynamite Live.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who thinks outside the box and hates cliches, Pete Schwabe.
Welcome back to hour number two. Our question tonight: what have you been doing to keep your mind off the election? Folks, we are in the home stretch. It's almost over. Right now, I'm very excited to welcome my next guest. You guys probably know him for a couple, two or three roles. I've been following this guy literally since the early 80s, and I just think he's terrific. So I was thrilled when he decided to make himself available for the show tonight. Actor John Grease joins me. It is great to have you. You have a great event coming up in Madison this Saturday night at the Barrymore Theater, Napoleon Dynamite Live. For those of you listening, John was Uncle Rico in Napoleon Dynamite, just an absolute treasure of a movie. How did you get involved with the film? Like, did they approach you? Did you see it and want to audition for it? How did that happen?
Oh, no, I knew absolutely nothing about this film. It's an interesting story because they made offers to a lot of people. One of them being, which I think is just fascinating as I'll get out, is Christopher Walken to play Uncle Rico. Could you imagine him? And, you know, I was the low-hanging fruit. You know, it was like, this guy's available. I mean, you know, all these other people, Walton Goggins and Christopher Walken, and they've all turned it down.
Wow.
No, truly.
Can you talk? Okay, so the first two films I saw you in, John, where I actually noticed you and I was like, oh, this guy's great. You were in Real Genius, real quirky part.
Yes.
And then you were in a movie called Running Scared. Can you talk a little bit about those two roles? They're such great roles.
Real Genius, originally when they called me to play the part of Kent.
Wow, really? I can't see that.
I know. And I read this. When I was early in my career, I got hired to play. They kept thinking, well, he's not good looking enough to be the good guy. So he's probably good looking enough to be the bad guy. Of course, I couldn't get on soap operas because they're like, nah, he ain't even good looking enough to be the bad guy.
And they say that to people. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, yeah, they do. Oh, yeah. You've got to have some pretty thick skin. And Robert Prescott, who ended up playing Kent, was so brilliant in that role that you say you can't imagine anybody else playing Uncle Rico. I could never imagine anybody else playing Kent but Robert Prescott. He's such a wonderful actor. So Real Genius, I called my agent when I got the audition, and they sent me the script, and I called him, and I said, I want to read for Laszlo. And he was like, what are you talking about? They called you to read for Kent. They probably have other ideas for Laszlo. I know, but I the role is speaking to me, and I got to try that. I'd rather go down on that one and in flames than go down in flames on doing this one, because that's not the one I want to do. This is the one I want to do. So he called them, and they said, okay, sure, he wants to read for that. Come on in. And he's too young for it, because it was written in the script that he was like 45 years old, you know. And so, but they kept calling me back, you know. They made me come back like four or five times. And then I finally got the job, and it was a life-changing experience for me, truly. I mean, yeah. Before that, I was working construction, you know, as well as acting from time to time and something here and there. But after that movie, yeah, I was, you know, on my way. Running Scared was a funny story, because I went in to meet with Peter Himes, and he sat there, and we had a great discussion. Now, meanwhile, sitting out in the waiting room is David Caruso and Ray Liotta to read or to talk to him about the same part, right?
Oh, wow.
But Peter Himes and I sit, and we gab for, I'm not kidding, an hour. And they're out there waiting. I'm sure they're getting angry as all get out. And then Peter looks at me and he goes, John, I love you, but I don't know you. I don't know your work. What have you done? And at that time, I had finished shooting Real Genius, but it wasn't done yet. But it turns out the old Sony lot where Peter Himes' office was the MGM lot at the time. And they were cutting Real Genius on the MGM lot. So I went home, and I called the editor, a guy named Richard Chu, who was very famous because he edited Star Wars. I said, hey, Richard, my name's John Grise. And he goes, oh, my God, I love you in this movie, Real Genius, that I'm cutting. And I said, that's why I'm calling you. I want to see if I can get a screening room on the lot this, like, coming week. Do you think you could put the scenes together for Peter Himes? He goes, don't worry about it. I'll put the scenes. I'll put three great scenes together. Man. I said, thank you so much. And then I called the studio operations, and I said, Peter Himes would like the Cary Grant screening room at a Friday at 11 a.m. And they were like, okay, Peter Himes, you know, like I was just, I ordered the room, and then I called Peter's office and I said, yeah, and you know, have a projectionist there. And then I called his office and I said, yes, 11 a.m. the Cary Grant screening room. Right. And sure enough, yes. Peter Himes comes in, sits down, he watches my scenes. He calls me, he goes, and I was just leaving the country to go to Italy to shoot something, and he goes, you got the job. When you come back, we're going to make a movie together. And that was it. And then later on, while we were shooting, because he was also the producer of the film, he walks up to me and while we're eating lunch, and he sits down, and he drops a piece of paper in front of me, and he says, did you rent the Cary Grant screening room on my dime? I started laughing and said, yes. And he said, good for you. Good for you. And picked up the piece of paper and walked away.
Oh, that's terrific. Wow.
It required a little bit of hustle. You know, you had to hustle.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah.
You couldn't just, yeah.
Be proactive, right.
Absolutely.
John, we have about a minute left. I had so many questions for you. I wanted to ask you about White Lotus, but I know you're a busy guy, and I tell me in about 30 seconds, this Saturday, such a great night. You played Uncle Rico. You're going to be there. People should go see you in Madison, Napoleon Dynamite Live. Are you looking forward to it?
Oh, I'm telling you something. We have such a great time. We love having this exchange with the audience. We don't turn out the lights in the theater. The lights are on, man. We're all together in this, and it's a great time. It really is a great time. And we have giveaways, and you know that it's just a lot of fun. It's beautifully janky and really really loose and really a lot of fun.
I love it. Check them out this Saturday, John Grise. Thank you so much, buddy. Crush it this Saturday. It's great to meet you.
Nightlight with Pete Chwaba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming,
welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we'll take a look back at the weekend happenings and talk about Veterans Day 2024. Join us then.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Mike Siegel joins us now to make our popcorn pick of the week. Hey, Mike.
When I was a kid in the 70s, there was no Walmart. There was no right. Sears was everything, from our tools to all our back-to-school clothes, everything else.
Right? Pants, stereos, kitchen appliances. Do you have pantyhose? Yeah, they're right next to power tools on second floor. It's like you really could get everything there.
Everything.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.